Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. The Fed cut rates last week, as was widely expected, and while investors are uncertain about the ultimate path of rate cuts from here, they certainly reacted positively to the cut last week. The S&P 500 continued its grind higher, setting more new all-time highs. The calendar is quieter this week, but the state of the economy and Fed policy will remain in focus. So joining me here at the table this morning to discuss this all, glad to welcome back Jason Dreho, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, thank you for dropping by on this Monday morning. Nice to be back with you.
Good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. Yeah, good to be back in the studio this time.
And the first day of fall, I might add. So we've made
You had to remind me. Okay.
So with that, Jason, a lot to cover. Let's, of course, begin with that 25 basis point Fed rate cut last week and the rationale behind that cut. What is your takeaway from the decision last week?
Well, let's just sort of summarize what the Fed actually did. You know, cutting 25 basis points, everyone knows that, hopefully at this point in time. There was updates to their economic projections, which were maybe a little bit surprising because not so much for this year, because 2025, we're three quarters of the way done, so you're not going to change much. But for 2026, they took up both their GDP growth forecasts, marginally, their inflation forecast, but also took down the unemployment rate. So overall, a little bit better macro picture today, or as of this Fed meeting versus June, which makes sense as we've moved forward 3 months. The economic data has held up a little bit better than expected. Inflation hasn't risen quite as much. Unemployment hasn't risen quite as much. I think they're kind of just marking to market, to some extent. But it wasn't kind of noteworthy that, in general, relative to what it was before, it's a slightly kind of reflationary tilt to the prior forecast. Something else that got a lot of focus was, the dot plot where the FOMC members, 19 of them, submit their dots of how much they think rates will be cut ultimately this year in total, 2026, 2027. As of June, the median dot of the members was, two cuts in total this year. Mm-hmm. Well, we got one in September, so that would have implied one more. The median dot now is now at three. It was a little bit split. There were nine members who were at three cuts in total this year, so I'm implying two more. Nine members had two or less in total, meaning they'd expect one more or no more the rest of this year. There was one outlier. We don't know if 100% certain, but it's like 99.9% certain that it was Stephen Moran's dot. He just joined the Fed, like literally for that meeting appointed by President Trump early in the summer. His dot applied six cuts in total this year. There was not
in
much.
In 2025.
In 2025.
Wow.
So basically three 50 basis point cuts, which, when there was a dissent, there's only one dissent. It was Mirren, and he basically said he wanted 50 basis points of cuts this time. In July, there was two members, Chris Waller and Michelle Bowman, who had sort of dissented, thought they should cut then. Now they were in line with that view. So a little less maybe dissent, overall. In terms of what they did and why they did it, Fed Chair Jay Powell did mention during the press conference that the downside risks to the labor market had increased, similar to the comments he made back in end of August at the Jackson Hole Central Bank Symposium. And basically he made the point that the labor market demand seemed to have slowed more than labor market supply, and that was the rationale, the Fed doesn't want to see the labor market demand slow any further. Ultimately, the thing is the way that Powell framed it is a bit of a risk management cut, and there's different ways to, people sort of interpret what those words mean. So not necessarily signaling this is the start of ongoing cuts, but some people would interpret it as like risk management means we want to get back to sort of neutral, relatively quickly, which would imply more cuts, coming. Our takeaway is that, what happened is sort of roughly in line with what we expected, a 25 basis point cut. We expect going into the meeting four consecutive 25 basis point cuts. So another one end of October, mid-December, end of January. And the guidance from the Fed will certainly be consistent with that view for 2025. I think, next year and beyond, it becomes a little more uncertain, well, definitely more uncertain of what path the Fed will take.
So from hearing that, Jason, the big question now is what comes next for rate cuts for the balance of 2025 and, of course, into 2026. So what are your expectations from the Chief Investment Office, Jason?
Well, I always like to start with, what is the market pricing? And where would we maybe deviate from that? Current market pricing is that there'll be four cuts basically in total by the end of July, and by the end of December of next year, the Fed funds rate would be about 2.9%, which implies 5.5-ish cuts, from the current level. Look, as I said, we expect cuts in the next three meetings. After that, I think we, another cut some point next year, but it really becomes, data dependent. And I think there's a good chance the Fed does 100, assesses where things are, and then sort of, you know, maybe, you know, move to a quarterly pace, one more cut, maybe two more cuts, something like that. The key thing is there's pretty good consensus and, you know, reason, you know, good reason for that consensus to cluster around the fact that we'll probably get two more cuts this year. If you looked at 2026, though, the consensus is, well, there's almost no consensus. It's very wide kind of, you know, dispersion of views. And you can see it in different ways. Go to the dot plot I mentioned, like, you know, it's kind of split, so you know how much we're going to get this year. If you look for next year, there's a really wide range, you know, of outcomes, you know, of how much the Fed would cut next year and where the Fed funds rate will end up by December of next year. At the low end are people who are, you know, expecting you know, the Fed funds rate to be like 2.5% to 2.75%. At the high end, basically between 3.75% and 3.75% and 4%. So 125 basis point range. And if you look at the number of dots at each sort of 25 basis point interval, it's almost uniformly distributed. Not quite, but there's not clustering in a couple extremes. It is kind of, you know, pretty broad-based, I think, which again reflects the fact that low conviction on exactly how things will play out next year, whether inflation could reaccelerate, whether the economy could really tip into a more severe global slowdown, whether inflation just ultimately kind of moderates on its own. I think market pricing similarly reflects this broad dispersion. If we think about a year from now, where is the Fed funds rate? You know, it's kind of centered around like 3 to 3.25. But it's, again, a range, a pretty like flat distribution of, you know, of outcomes of where the Fed funds rate will be. So low consensus for next year. The market implied sort of, or a measure of the market implied Fed fund neutral rate is also lower, more like 3.25% to 3.5%. Ultimately, I think what will matter beyond the next two, probably three cuts into early January, the path and ultimate destination for the Fed funds rate is going to depend on a number of factors. Economic data, how it actually plays out, and the sensitivity of the Fed to that data. Clearly, the Fed right now is sensitive to labor market weakness. And so if we get a week's job report for September that is negative, for example, you know, or a couple of months where we are, you know, running around zero, decent chance the Fed ultimately then pulls forward some cuts from next year to maybe cut 50 basis points, if not October, then by December. You know, just for perspective, you know, we know the labor market has cooled. In the last 3 months, the headline payrolls growth for non-farm payrolls was 29,000 on the three-month average. If you strip out, though, healthcare and social assistant, over the last 4 months, it's minus 36,000. So again, sort of softness in the labor market, that would warrant, especially if there's any further weakness, perhaps an acceleration. Ultimately, of course, what is the Fed's sort of approach to policy? What level are they comfortable with in terms of how they balance the risks between, you know, growth, labor market, and inflation? I would have said even a year ago when we were discussing that the Fed, there's a bias towards the Fed allowing the economy to run hot, meaning it tolerate inflation to get back to 2% very, very gradually, which is implicitly almost tolerating an inflation target of 2.5% to 3% in order to keep nominal GDP growth higher. You run the economy hot, you keep the labor market strong. Also looking at the, you know, the fiscal situation, if you're running a deficit of 6% plus of GDP, if you can have nominal GDP growth of like 5% or higher, that at least kind of stabilizes the situation or slows it, you know, over time from a nominal perspective, how the debt problem becomes high. So I think there's a natural bias for the Fed towards something along these lines. You know, also another factor in terms of how much the Fed will cut is like, what is neutral? Like how much does the Fed need to cut? We can estimate it. We know we can't actually observe it. There's also a real debate, you know, tying in like, well, if we get faster productivity growth, all else equal, that means a higher neutral Fed funds rate, which means the Fed needs to cut less, all else equal. That ties in very much with AI, how is it being dispersed, how it's having an impact on the overall growth rate of the economy and the productivity. We're still early on that, but again, as the next 6 months, year goes on, we'll get better clarity. So all this is to say a lot of uncertainty for the path of next year, a lot of factors, underlying structural trends, the actual economic data near-term, how it plays out. What we expect, as I mentioned, three more cuts. And I think we have pretty good confidence in that. Beyond that, probably one more for next year, but I think the path is very sort of, you know, data dependent.
So, Jason, running with this a bit further, you mentioned that the path and final destination for the Fed funds rate will matter for markets. How so exactly?
Well, right now, it's clear there's a lack of consensus, as I mentioned. And when there's a lack of consensus, it means the market narrative of how many cuts, the market pricing for how many cuts can shift a lot based off of a couple of months of data. So things can move around a lot. And we've seen this for the past couple of years, where 2 months of inflationary data, suddenly the market believes one thing, and then 2 months of disinflationary, the market believes something else, and you kind of, you know, pivot around that. So low conviction means just more subject to sentiment shifts in terms of how things will play out. And that just means ultimately market pricing and performance will also oscillate with it. right now, I think the markets generally believe that the Fed will be able to kind of thread the needle, meaning cut rates, stabilize the growth, so maybe moderates a little bit, but ultimately kind of accelerates next year. It doesn't lead to inflationary impulse. There's a tariff one-time shock that will play out, and by this time next year, inflation will be clearly rolling over. So you have a 2026 where growth should accelerate, inflation comes down, and the Fed is cutting rates. Like that's what the market, the consensus view. Not a lot of margin for error if it turns out one of those data points upsets the apple cart and the Fed has to do something a little bit different. So for example, fewer cuts or slower pace of cuts, you'd see rates go higher. And there's some, if you look at the market last week, some thought that because Powell didn't give more guidance, the back end of the curve, the 10-year was up a little bit higher. Real interest rates, the real 10-year yield was up. You can also see if that happens, if rates go higher, some of the stuff that's been benefiting from rate cuts, like small cap stocks, maybe home builders, that would also sort of unwind. The dollar would probably strengthen. More cuts at faster pace, could have different implications. Rates likely go lower. Equities, if it's a growth scare, real growth scare, you could see equities pull back. But then if it's not a bad growth scare, people buy the dip, and then you see equities kind of rally. So definitely, kind of rotating potentially among market narratives of like Goldilocks, reflation, if the economy looks like it's going to run hot, stagflation, if they get kind of gets it wrong and inflation picks up and growth slows. So definitely sensitive to ultimately the end point of where the Fed is.
So in terms of how to position in this environment and considerations when it comes to what's ahead of us, let's end on asset allocation. And the timing works well, Jason, because CIO last week published its latest house view update. So can you close out by sharing with our listeners some of the key messages from this update?
Well, the title of the house view, the monthly letter, was Investing as the Fed Cut Rates. So it's very literal. So, what should you do? Like one of the key messages is that, the bull market remains on tack, and therefore a key message to kind of buy on dips in equities. I alluded to some risks and things, the Fed having to kind of thread the needle, but I think there's a lot of investors who'd be kind of used any opportunities and pullbacks in equity markets, the S&P 500 specifically, to add allocations. And we would agree with that overall assessment. We think the markets will be higher 12 months from now, and a decent amount higher enough to justify increasing equity allocations. And this is due to a combination of Fed easing, robust earnings growth, and also like these AI tailwinds all should support equities. If we look at our expectations for earnings for this year and next year, 8% growth this year, 7.5% for next year. Now valuations are rich, and we've seen the markets almost kind of in a melt-up mode right now. So it's kind of further stretching valuations. If you take the price to earnings ratio, it's at the 99th percentile over the last 20 years. And even if you strip out the Mag 7 that have that are even more expensive, it's still at 20, which is definitely elevated. On the flip side, though, like things like AI CapEx spending continue to grow very, very strongly, up maybe 66% this year, another 33% we expect to next year, up to $500 billion. So that alone is starting to kind of drive and aggregate sort of the economic data. So bottom line, still think the bull market's intact. Like AI beneficiaries, the tech sector is one of them. Like financials and banks specifically, because they're exposed to sort of a deregulatory push, and it's quite likely the administration will kind of accelerate that over the next 12 months or so. Another key message, and this ties into investing, is the Fed cut rates. Prepare to put cash to work. For investors who have been sitting on the sidelines in money market funds getting 5.5%, a year ago, that's clearly lower, and the path going forward is lower. So there is an opportunity cost that's rising to sit in cash as other asset classes give you better returns. So thinking about where you can deploy capital within fixed income, for example, if not just equities. Within fixed income, we like more securitized credit, agency MBS, CMBS, over corporate credit like investment grade or high yield bonds. Nothing really is cheap in fixed income or in kind of spread product or credit product in general, but it's particularly expensive and rich in sort of the corporate side. A little more attractive yields in securitized credit, so kind of lean in that direction. Rates fell out, the 10-year actually briefly touched below 4%, and we've seen it back up post the Fed announcement. Remember last year when the Fed cut, ultimately the 10-year rose 100 basis points. We're not going to get the same kind of move because it was a lower starting point and, I think a higher ending point. But I think the direction of travel suggests that near term, the 10-year could easily back up to 4.3, 4.4%. So as a result, we continue to favor more like a 3 to 5 year point on treasuries. Still like long maturity munis, though, because they are still at a pretty significant discount relative to kind of a treasury equivalent securities. And the final thing is gold. We've talked about this repeatedly, but it continues to deliver as a portfolio diversifier. It's a good way to kind of play sort of a trend towards investors globally moving away from U.S. asset classes wanted to de-dollarize their portfolio. Gold has been a substantial beneficiary, and there's not a lot of indicating that that trend is about to shift over time.
Well, Jason, thank you for dropping by to kick off another trading week. Very helpful to hear about your reflections, takeaways from last week's FOMC meeting, the rate decision, expectations in terms of what's ahead of us, and of course, the guidance when it comes to positioning. So have a great week ahead, Jason, and look forward to continuing with our conversation next Monday.
You too. Have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.